He's a U.S. Ranger. Highly decorated. Did a little hell-raising when he was a kid, but nothing serious. He's defending his wife. Got in a drunken brawl. And he killed a guy. Could have happened to you or me.
After serving the last of his sentence, Cameron Poe is taking the first plane home to his wife and daughter.
Today's flight is a special one. We're populating Louisiana's Felton Penitentiary. These guys are the worst of the worst.
See a lot of celebrities among us. I see 11 Primetime Live, 3 Regis and Kathy Lee's, and a genuine 2020 interviewee.
What you looking at, punk?
Nothing, I was just lying on your cage.
But one wrong flight.
Stewardess, what's the in-flight movie today?
Can ruin your whole day.
What happened? We caught the plane, man!
Welcome to Con Air. Jailbird 1, you are not cleared for takeoff.
And nobody on this aircraft gives a flying.
The issue here is how the plane is brought down.
Shoot it down.
There are innocent people up there.
He's got a little girl to come home to. He's been waiting for this day for 8 years.
What are you gonna do?
What do you think I'm going to do? I'm gonna save the day.
This summer, check your weapons. Take your seat.
Isn't that your car?
And say your prayers. From Jerry Bruckheimer, the producer of The Rock, Nicolas Cage, John Cusack, John Malkovich.
Where are they going to land this thing?
How do you feel about the blackjack tables?
On June 6th. Air, directed by Simon West.
Thank you, and have a pleasant flight.
Hello, and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. I think today is going to be another glorious episode where we get to talk about a Nick Cage movie that is actually very fond and dear to my heart.
There we go. All right, the year was 1997. Nicolas Cage has fully cemented himself as a blockbuster action star with The Rock, right? But how to follow up such an insane, over-the-top action film concerning ex-cons and Army Rangers produced by Jerry Bruckheimer? Well, he could always make another insane, over-the-top action film concerning ex-cons and Army Rangers produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, and that is exactly what he did, Mike.
Wow, I've never realized that, and this changes everything I thought about this movie.
Yeah, the film we are discussing today is, of course, the second in the holy trinity of Cage action films. It's Con Air.
We did it.
We did it. We made it, Ma. Top of the world.
We're going to make that joke next episode again. Because we have finally made it.
Yeah, and then we'll retire the joke entirely, yeah, along with this podcast, because we'll be done.
I mean, pretty much.
What's the point of continuing anymore? I mean, we'll continue, but we'll be sad about it.
Yeah.
We'll be actively angry while we're podcasting about the rest of these movies. Just grumbling through. I don't want to talk about Captain Corelli's mandolin. I want to talk about Face Off.
But for real, though.
But for real. So Con Air is the first Jerry Bruckheimer film to be produced without his producing partner, Don Simpson, who died a year earlier. But supposedly, Simpson hated the concept of Con Air anyway. Bruckheimer and Simpson actually dissolved their partnership over this movie.
Wow.
This was like a year before Don Simpson died. So Bruckheimer actually went full steam ahead with this movie before Don Simpson had died. Got the green light for this movie in like 95 and just kept going. This film was the directorial debut of director Simon West, who hasn't really made a movie quite as good since.
It would be hard to.
That's true. In that respect, he's like a one-hit wonder of a director. Some of his other credits include Lara Croft Tomb Raider, When a Stranger Calls, the 2006 remake, The Mechanic, and The Expendables 2.
Wow.
Yeah. He's been working steadily on a lot of crappy action movies over the course of the last decade or so. And he also directed another Nicolas Cage film, 2012 Stolen, which is mostly known as the direct-to-DVD ripoff of Taken that Nicolas Cage starred in, which I actually own on DVD, funnily enough. I've never watched it, but I do own it.
Well, in 3 years when we get to that movie.
I am so excited to bust out that DVD.
Your investment would have been worth it.
Most recently, he directed the Jason Statham movie Wild Card, which came out last year. And he's currently working on a thriller called Stratton, starring Diamond Cooper. Now, to me, Simon West's direction is kind of where Con Air suffers a little bit. If you look at The Rock and you look at, like, Face Off, you know, these are movies directed by Michael Bay and John Woo, two very different but very distinctive visual stylists who have an eye for action. Simon West is fine for this movie, but he kind of pales in comparison to those guys. And I don't think he does that much to make Con Air stand out. The film mostly succeeds to me because Jerry Bruckheimer knows how to blow stuff up real good. and he really delivers with Con Air, I would say. Con Air was written by Scott Rosenberg, a writer who has since gone on to write another Cage Bruckheimer joint, Gone in 60 Seconds. Kangaroo Jack is another is another credit from the screenwriter, and the upcoming Jumanji remake. So we have. So I mean, talk about pedigree, Mike. I mean, this is a dream
it's Hollywood
team.
Royalty.
But like The Rock, Con Air boasts an impressive array of actors, and I think that's really where this movie shines, is the charismatic performers that it's got on its side here. Of course, you've got Nicolas Cage as Cameron Poe, an ex-Army Ranger serving a jail sentence for accidentally killing a man. You've got his wife, Trisha Poe, played by Monica Potter from Parenthood. John Cusack plays Poe's ally, Vince Larkin. And Comb Meany from Star Trek The Next Generation and Hell on Wheels plays Duncan Malloy, the pain-in-the-ass DEA agent who gets in Cusack's way at every turn. And then you've got the guy who runs away with this movie, in my opinion, John Malkovich as Cyrus the Virus Grisham. Malkovich is perfect in this movie. I love him as the slimy bad guy in this movie. He's like intellectual and off kilter in like a distinctly John Malkovich way. Like, he's, you know, it's what I picture when I think of John Malkovich. You know, he's like a little bit aloof, a little bit like kind of carries himself as if he knows better than everybody else.
Right.
Both in real life and in this movie.
But might just be crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And as for the rest of the convicts, I mean, Ving Rhames plays Diamond Dog, who is Cyrus's number two, which makes this a Kiss of Death reunion as well. Right. Mikelty Williamson, who is Bubba in Forrest Gump and was Limehouse in Justified, he plays Poe's friend Baby-O. Danny Trejo, by side note, by the way, all the nicknames for these guys are phenomenal. Throwing that out there. Danny Trejo plays a serial rapist, Johnny 23. Nick Chinland plays murderer Billy Bedlam. Dave Chappelle is here, improvising most of his dialogue. Almost all improvised. He actually, I think he recounted that in like a commentary on the Chappelle Show, like a DVD commentary. He was like, oh yeah, Con Air, I was in that. Improvised most of my dialogue. So Dave Chappelle is here doing a lot of improv as Pinball. MC Gainey plays the pilot called Swamp Thing. Brendan Kelly plays Conrad, and he also appeared in The Rock. I don't remember who Conrad is. I don't remember who he was in The Rock. He's just a guy.
He's just a person.
Just a guy who was in both. Rinoli Santiago plays the transvestite drug dealer Sally Can't Dance. Jesse Barrigo plays Francisco. And, of course, Steve Buscemi plays Garland Green, the Marietta Mangler. one of the film's most memorable and bizarre characters, I would say. And also, that means it's a Zondali reunion.
Correct, yeah.
So there's that. So reunions of Kiss of Death, The Rock, and Zondali all in this. So nice to bring it together. It's at the point now where Cage has been working long enough where almost every movie that we talk about, there's at least one other actor that he's worked with before.
Right.
So I feel like every time now it's like, oh, yeah, this is a reunion of this movie, which is kind of cool. I think that's neat.
It's neat. It's fun to see how things happen that way. And I think just you reading all these the character names and their weird aliases and everything. This is a thought I had. So during the movie, we get the introduction montage of who's going to be on the flight.
Right.
And this movie does the stuff that Suicide Squad tried to do.
I thought of Suicide Squad also.
A million. Suicide Squad couldn't have dreamed to be this good at that.
Yeah, exactly. They even use some of the same dialogue. I think they both call their group Worst of the Worst, right? These are bad guys, Worst of the Worst.
Probably.
Yeah. And the thing is about Con Air, it only introduces its bad guys once.
But they're introduced better and they have better names in Con Air.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true. Other bit actors that I'd like to mention in this. Angela Featherstone appears as Ginny, and if you don't know who that is, she is the redheaded worker who appears with John Cusack throughout the movie. And I couldn't place where I knew her from at first, but I knew her from something. I was like so sure, like she looked so familiar, it was like driving me insane. So I looked her up on IMDb. She was in an episode of Friends, she was in an episode of Seinfeld, but she is the girl in S-Mart who Ash makes out with at the end of Army of Darkness.
What? Yes, she is. Oh my god.
Mind blown.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Isn't that nuts? That was awesome. I must have seen the ending of Army of Darkness hundreds of times.
Yeah.
like conservatively speaking. That was pretty cool. And also Don S. Davis, who was a Major Briggs on Twin Peaks. Yep. Is the man driving the Volvo that gets crushed by Pinball's body flying from the sky. Which is a ridiculous sentence to say, but...
But it happens.
But there it is, and I feel like I can say that... If I describe a lot of the things in this movie, it would be a ridiculous thing to say. The IMDb plot synopsis of Con Air reads, newly paroled ex-con and former U.S. Ranger Cameron Poe finds himself trapped in a prisoner transport plane when the passengers seize control. Now, like The Rock, Con Air was a box office success, pulling in $224 million on a budget of $75 million. It's the same budget as The Rock. It made less than The Rock did. And reviews weren't as strong this time around. The Rock mostly got solid reviews across the board. Like, it has, like, a 60-something Rotten Tomatoes, which isn't, like, the best, but it's, like, pretty solid, and the reviews that were positive were very positive. Reviews weren't as strong this time around, but those who appreciate the kind of ridiculousness that this film has to offer... gave it pretty positive marks. Andrew Johnson from Time Out New York wrote in his review, leaving The Rock last summer, I thought it seemed physically impossible for a more over-the-top action movie to be made. That was pretty short-sighted of me, since it was only a matter of time until producer Jerry Bruckheimer topped himself, as he does, with the wildly entertaining Con Air. So there you go. And also, Con Air was nominated for 2 Oscars, Mike.
What? That's at least 2 too many.
Best director and best picture. No.
I believed you for half of a second.
2 Oscars. It was nominated for best sound mixing and for best original song. And that song is How Do I Live, performed by Trisha Yearwood and written by Diane Warren, which features very prominently at the beginning of the movie and at the end.
I laughed
a lot when I heard the song for the first time when the movie started. Because it just sounds like the ultimate cliche 90s love ballad.
That's exactly what it is, though.
And it bookends the movie with Cage's relationship in such cliche excess that only the 90s could pull off. And it actually lost to another cliche 90s love ballad, which was My Heart Will Go On from Titanic.
You know what? I thought it sounded like My Heart Will Go On.
They're like the same song. It also lost the sound mixing to Titanic, because Titanic won everything that year. That was the year. Right. That was the year of Titanic. Con Air. Mike, just give me your overall thoughts. Give me your overall thoughts on Con Air. What are your general feelings?
I mean, this is another one of those. What more could I even have to say than what I said already in the 4 minutes we've been doing this or whatever it is? This is another one of those, TNT, FX. Afternoon specials that's on at 2 p.m. and you're like scanning by and you can't help but stop and watch it because it's silly action just like The Rock is. I mean, right. I don't think I ever noticed how just it is a template of The Rock. it's the same thing almost. And it's mindless explosion action fun. It is, I agree with you what you said though, it does pale in comparison to The Rock and Face Off as far as direction goes. It is very much we'll put a camera here and we'll watch what happens.
Right.
I don't think there's anything exciting going on in that department. That said, though, it is chock full of cheesy, silly one-liners. We're back at the return of Nicolas Cage weird voice.
Yes.
So that's always exciting when that happens.
Yep.
And it's just a big, I could imagine this probably came out, silly summer fun. I assume, I don't know.
Yeah, it came out in June.
In the pre-Marvel world.
In the pre-Marvel world, the pre-Snyderverse.
The pre-Snyderverse, when we were allowed to have fun. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, that's my surface level take on it. It's just big, dumb explosions. It's a lot of fun. It's an interesting contrast to things like, you know, I'm thinking of Transformers, which gets those, that, you know, the same labels of, you know, turn off your brain type thing. But for some reason, I feel like this Con Air doesn't ask you to turn your brain off in some weird way. Like, it does, but I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I think it is a colossally stupid movie. I'm not a fan of the phrase "turn off your brain." I think I said that in our The Rock review.
That might have been why that popped into my head. Probably.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. Like, I'm not a fan of the phrase "turn off your brain," but if it ever applied, I feel like this is the movie to apply to.
That's fair.
Here's the thing: I think Con Air is a very fun time, especially in the last 40 minutes or so, where it just goes balls out insanity. I don't think it's as strong as The Rock, but it fully commits to its insane premise. And just rolls with it, and I dig it for that. I think the film definitely gets better as it goes along. I think the first half of the movie feels almost quaint compared to what goes on later on in the movie. And the thing is, the first half is like a pretty solid, like enjoyable, kind of self-contained thriller. Most of it takes place in the plane. It does stop every once in a while. They land and do other things, but most of it takes place in the plane. You got these characters, and it's still kind of silly. It's still kind of dumb. It's like a goofy premise. But it's played relatively straight, I think. Right. And then they land the second time, and everything just goes out the window. It goes bananas. And yeah, like I said, Bruckheimer knows how to make stuff explode real good.
Yeah.
I don't think West as much here as a visual stylist. What really makes this movie are the actors. You know, Malkovich in particular is phenomenal. And I love Cage. Like, I love Cage to death. He's great. But Malkovich, man, he steals this movie. He steals it completely. And he's great, but Cage is very good too. Cusack is fun. Colm Meaney was a surprisingly great presence also. And he's always a very good actor, but it had been years since I've watched this movie. I forgot that he was in it. And he ends up being a very fun foil to John Cusack. Steve Buscemi, is a very weird character, who I think the movie has a very weird relationship with, and I'll talk about that later. Yeah. Felt very oddly handled to me. Vic Rames is fun. Dave Chappelle is very enjoyable. He is actually not in the movie as much as he should be, I think. Everybody's memorable is the thing. Like everybody feels like they're an enjoyable character and fun to watch on screen. Let's talk about Cage. What did you think of Nicolas Cage in Con Air?
It's one I can't even put into words what Nicolas Cage in Con Air means to me, Mike.
Well, I'm going to need it in 1,000 words or less. So,
in at least a few words. Yeah, I mean, this is, like I said, this is one of those movies that, like the you know, it's basic cable afternoon action movie things. So this is a movie that I have watched many times, just like The Rock. I think Enemy of the State is one of the other ones that I've talked about before. So, like, I said Put Down the Bunny, which I've been quoting wrong my whole life, apparently. But that's just one of those things that's part of my personality. Those, like, that line is so stupid and it's hilarious and perfect.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage does a great job of playing whatever kind of character Cameron Poe is supposed to be. like the writing for this movie, for what it is, like what the premise of the movie is, the writing style fits it, and like how silly and insane. These are all cartoon characters.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
But it's a cartoon movie, basically.
It basically is, especially towards the end, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah, I think Cameron Poe is very different than Stanley Goodspeed as well, which I think helps kind of differentiate this movie from The Rock in certain ways. Cage plays him differently. Like, Poe is almost like this Zen badass throughout the movie. Like, he knows he did wrong. He's trying to quietly make up for it, repay his debt to society, return home to meet his daughter. I saw somebody online compare it to his situation almost like Die Hard at first. Like, normal guy caught in this extraordinary situation, even though he's not really a normal guy. He's, you know, a highly trained ex-army ranger who killed a man and has spent years in prison and, you know, all this stuff. So I don't think he's quite I don't think the Die Hard comparison is that much there, but I could sort of see it in the type of action movie this is at first. It's almost like it goes from Die Hard to like Die Hard 4 within the span of its runtime.
Right. I mean, in the first couple of minutes after he's sentenced to prison and he kills the guy, the judge at the military trials says, your body is a deadly weapon or something like that. Like, right. You're a highly trained soldier, like you're a deadly weapon. So, I mean, that right off the bat, like, we're shown what kind of person or what Cameron Poe is capable of as compared to what Stanley Goodspeed is shown to be.
Right.
Although even at the beginning of The Rock, we're shown that he's this quiet badass that doesn't know it.
That's true as well. Yeah.
But in this one, he knows it.
Yeah. And Cage, as an actor, is known for going pretty over the top. And I feel like that would fit pretty well at home in this movie. But if anything, I think he underplays it for a lot of the runtime. Yes. He gets a lot of cool dialogue, he gets a lot of fight scenes, but he doesn't get the little, like, weird tinges of personality and wild line readings like Goodspeed did. You know?
Yeah.
There's no Zeus's butthole line in Con Air, as far as I can think of, right? Like, there's no analog to that.
Yeah. No, he's very much the straight-laced normal guy amidst the insanity of these eight life prison sentence people. Like,
right.
There's no way he can live up to what they're doing.
Yes.
And especially not what Malkovich is doing
in this movie. Yeah. And like you mentioned, Cage says he's a different voice in this movie. He has a southern accent. He's supposed to be from Alabama. He actually spent some time in Alabama before filming to perfect the accent.
Oh, perfect is a strong word.
Well, it didn't. That was on the IMDb trivia page, and perfect is actually in quotation marks.
Really?
Yes. yeah, it's quite the accent that he's doing.
Yeah.
Certainly a unique one. It's not the first southern accent that we've seen Cage do. He had an accent in Raising Arizona as well.
Right.
That was more of a southwestern thing. It was a different kind of southern accent that he was doing there. Did you think the accent fit the character? Did you think it worked? Did it distract you when he slipped in and out of the accent throughout the movie?
I think any other movie, and that accent ruins it. But this is Con Air. Like, it's like...
Because it's this one.
Yeah, because it's this silly, insane... Like, it's a cartoon, like I said. And cartoon characters usually have weird voices. And it fits for him. It fits for this movie. It serves as a way to differentiate him from whatever... All the craziness going on around him. However, like you said, it slips in and out as he yells or doesn't yell or... all these weird things. But, yeah, I mean, it works for me. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was solid. I enjoyed it. I'm a fan of Nicolas Cage doing weird voices, and this happened to be one.
Yeah, and this delivers.
Yeah, it delivers that for me. So how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play thus far?
I feel like it's like we were saying with The Rock, that this is part of the maybe potential endgame for what
for Cage whatever was... Cage wanted to do at the time.
Yeah, he has established himself as action hero, leading man person.
Right.
And we're going to get more of it for
Absolutely.
A long time.
Yeah, I think Con Air kind of proved that The Rock wasn't just a fluke and that
right.
Cage could be like a viable action star. The next few years of his career would be kind of spent alternating between big blockbusters and smaller scale projects. You know, he's got like Bringing Out the Dead coming up. He's got Adaptation coming up. I feel like... I was re-going through his filmography, as I want to do on occasion, because we do this podcast.
Over how many episodes we have.
Yeah, exactly. But I think you can divide it into certain... Like, you can kind of pinpoint certain areas of his career. And so I would say from, like, 95 up through, like, 2007, 2008, Cage is still starring in, like, major blockbusters. Like...
Yeah.
Major blockbusters, like big movies, like oftentimes not great blockbusters, like, but you know, still pretty big ones. And then you get to the 2010s, and that's really the deluge into direct to DVD, video on demand stuff. I don't know if you've seen some recent stuff that he's been doing. He's been picking up a lot of interesting projects. I think he's poised to make like a big comeback pretty soon.
And I think so. Just by looking, I've looked recently, and there's a few on there that seem like. Oh, that could be it. Like, those all seem potentially like there could actually be
yeah.
real things.
Yeah, I mean, he had a small role in Oliver Stone's Snowden, which was kind of big. And then he's doing this movie called Army of One, which is a comedy about him trying to hunt down Osama bin Laden. I don't know if you...
I saw that.
Yeah, you've seen it. I saw the trailer for that. It looked pretty good. And then he's got this new movie coming out called Dog Eat Dog with Willem Dafoe, which is supposed to be insane and supposed to be really good. It's directed by Paul Schrader. I've heard very good things. So, he's still doing, like, smaller, like... kind of direct-to-video stuff, but it sounds like he's picking more interesting projects. So who knows? Maybe this podcast could actually be relevant again.
Maybe. I mean, we're getting the Mel Gibson comeback now, apparently.
So anything can happen.
Exactly.
Although, in the regards to the Mel Gibson comeback, Hacksaw Ridge is still being advertised as from the director of Braveheart and not from Mel Gibson.
I saw a commercial that had from an Academy Award-winning director, Mel Gibson, in it.
Did it really?
Yeah, so who knows? Big things.
All right. I did want to mention also that this is the third time that we've seen Nicolas Cage cause destruction in Las Vegas.
He must love Las Vegas. I mean, I think he lives there now in real life. Like, I think he does.
He might, actually. I remember, it was pretty recently. He got into a fight with yeah. the guy from Motley Crue, right? Outside of, like, a Las Vegas hotel?
I think so.
I'm blanking on the guy from Motley Crue's name. The guy from Motley Crue started like assaulting a girl, and Nick Cage like stopped him, because Nick Cage is a real life superhero.
That's right. His superpower is being in movies.
Yeah, there you go. We should start like a Cage news segment on this podcast. whatever's happening in Cage's life, we should report.
I'm not against that. That would be real. Yeah, I think
we should look into that. But yeah, this is the third time we've seen him destroy Las Vegas, metaphorically in leaving Las Vegas. But
right.
But in Honeymoon in Vegas, you know, he's causing a lot of chaos. Elvis is flying from the sky, and all this kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
And also destroying his relationship in that movie in Las Vegas. This time he's literally destroying Las Vegas.
Yeah. Sammy crashes a plane into it.
A lot of chaos happening there. So are there moments or scenes in this movie that stood out to you, Mike? Like things that you wanted to talk about specifically?
I think just everything Dave Chappelle, anytime he's on screen, I forgot he's in this movie and just how amazing he is. I mean, the quote apparently is actually, I said, put the bunny back in the box. So that scene that has changed my life, I'm glad I got the quote right now.
Right.
I mean, just kind of all of it is just it's like the junkyard shootout at the end is just absolutely insane.
Yes.
And it's so much fun.
Yeah, the crane coming down and like hitting the plane as it's coming, and like there's explosions and the flying car. I think it's the hardest I laughed in this movie, which is the car getting attached to the plane and the car just going up in the air and kind of just like waving in the air. And then Cage looking back at it, and also Cage not being sucked out by the wind turbulence while he's standing there and just looking back at the car and being like, on any other day this would be strange.
Yeah, it's just a really silly movie. What about you, Mike? What's your favorite standout scene?
The thing I really wanted to talk about was Cyrus the Virus's gloriously insane death sequence, which is straight out of a Final Destination movie. Like, so many things happen to him in such a short amount of time. Cage handcuffs him to the fire truck ladder that they're fighting on, which is insane in of itself. He raises the ladder so that he's like stuck to the ladder, and like the truck is going full speed, smashes him into a bridge. And he crashes through the glass panes of the bridge, both glass panes, and then falls through, lands on some power lines, and gets electrocuted. And then somehow, this wasn't clear, he somehow lands on a conveyor belt, which leads into a rock crusher, in which he gets his head stuck, and his head gets smashed by the rock crusher. So, like, not only is Cyrus dead, he's, like, super dead.
No, that all tracks for me, though.
Yeah. But the thing, I think I read online that they had researched, somebody working on a movie put some research into it and said, like, you know, just the amount, like, the impact of him hitting the bridge would have killed him. Like,
kill him, like, four times over, basically. Yeah.
Amazing. Which is kind of nuts. So that to me was like the standout sequence of this movie. That was just like, what? I also wanted to talk about Steve Buscemi's character. What's his name again? The Marietta Mangler. It's like Garland or Garland Green or something. I feel like the movie had a very weird relationship with him, because this guy is established as like a serial killer,
right?
Like one of the worst of the worst.
Straight up evil.
They bring him out as like Hannibal Lecter, like yeah. on the gurney, and then John Malkovich lets him out, and he says, we can't lock a national treasure like this up. Which, if you look on the IMDb page, There's a trivia thing on the IMDb page that says, John Malkovich has a line in the movie, we can't let National Treasure lock this up. Nicolas Cage starred in a movie called National Treasure.
Oh my god.
So, great job, IMDb
Thanks,
community.
IMDb.
That's good stuff.
Killing it.
Great trivia.
Yep.
Fun fact. But yeah, I think Steve Buscemi's character is really weird. Like, he's obviously supposed to be very weird and off-putting. He doesn't do really anything throughout the movie. He kind of just sits there for a long time, says some weird things, and has some funny moments with Cage, where Cage is like, please stop talking. Like, stop.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And then there's this, he has this like kind of weird subplot where he leaves, meets a little girl. I don't know how far he went to find this little girl in this otherwise empty, abandoned airport hangar.
Yeah.
But he meets this little girl, has like a tea party with her. They sing, they've got the whole world in her hands. And then he comes back. He has like a doll from the little girl. He sings the song again as the plane is crashing down. And then he disappears. And then the very last shot of the movie is Buscemi in Vegas on like a winning streak with like a girl on his arm.
Yeah. It's like it would any other. If this came out now, that's like the sequel setup. Like, I don't think it doesn't make any sense.
I think it's just like this movie has a very weird amount of love for that character. Like, this is a serial killer.
Yeah. You know? He's given the chance. I don't remember specifically the dialogue, or I remember some of it, but he's kind of serves this like outside, like a voice for the whoever wrote the movie to comment on like the prison system in some weird way. Like, but it doesn't go anywhere. I don't think like it's not effective.
The entire time I kept expecting him to do something like awesome, like break out some action sequence. I felt like they were setting him up to kill John Malkovich.
Right.
At some point. But there's nothing like that. He just kind of, he doesn't do much throughout the movie. He's just kind of there. And it kind of made me like weirdly uncomfortable that the movie was like that much in love with this character. Yeah. You know, this established serial killer. And it's kind of in love with all of its convict characters as well. Like, it paints them as ugly people. But like, it wants us to like them and have fun watching them. And so it's like a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely pretty morbid in that regard.
Yeah.
Where like we're definitely supposed to sympathize with some of them, and it's weird.
Yeah, I will say I did write this down in my notes. Most of this movie is just about one character needing an insulin shot. That's the entire plot for about an hour and a half of this movie.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It's just Cage trying to get an insulin shot for Mike Kelty Williamson's character, which you know it's kind of you know the stakes are low, you know.
For a while, they're pretty low.
They're pretty low, and then suddenly they're in Vegas and everything's going to shit. But like, you know. Also, you know, throwing out similarities to The Rock, there's a, you know, the scene where John Malkovich takes over the plane. He kills like the three people, and he says like, "I'm the only one with the gun. Welcome to Con Air," which is very similar to the scene where Sean Connery opens up Alcatraz for them and says, "Welcome to The Rock."
Yeah, you're not wrong.
So I'm really hoping next 2 weeks from now, John Travolta finds some kind of opportunity to say, "Welcome to Face Off."
We can only hope.
It's got to happen. I don't, you know, got to complete the trilogy.
If not, then what's even the point, Mike?
Exactly. And yeah, again, I mean, Cage has some phenomenal lines in this movie. One of my favorites is, you know, he's talking to Cusack in the airport hangar when they finally meet. And Cusack's like talking to him and he's like, "What are you gonna do?" And Cage's like, "What do you think I'm gonna do? I'm gonna save the fucking day."
Yeah, he knows exactly who he is in this movie. Like, that character knows what he is, and it's amazing.
Exactly. I think everything to do with the bunny is like a litmus test for how you can tell this movie knows it's ridiculous. Like,
yep.
Like, if you watch this movie and take it kind of straight, like, if you watch this movie and think like that feels like a normal action movie to you, then you're watching it wrong. Like,
I'm not trying to say your fun is wrong, but
you're watching like a clear it's clearly coming from a very goofy place. And basically this movie gets bonkers once they reach the empty airport hangar, and Cusack gets to join in on the action. I mean, like, just the airplane landing with the conveniently placed giant propane tank is nuts in and of itself. And Pinball's body falling from the sky is also pretty great. Buscemi's line, Buscemi does have this pretty fantastic line when all the convicts are on the plane dancing to Sweet Home Alabama.
That's the scene that has stuck with me. Other than the put the bunny back in the box scene, that's the scene that stuck with me the most. I think of Con Air when I hear Sweet Home Alabama. And I'm not kidding.
Define irony. Bunch of idiots dancing on a plane to a song made famous by a band that died in a plane crash.
So that was pretty great. I mean, are there any other choice lines for you in this movie? I do love, going back to the bunny, John Malkovich's line when he has the bunny, and he's holding the bunny at gunpoint, and and he says, "Nobody move, or the bunny gets it."
Yeah. My favorite, I think, is... right, one of my other favorites is after Pinball dies and the police call the U.S. Marshals, calls John Cusack, and he's like, "What's that got to do with me?" And he's like, "It literally got your name written all over it." It's just so stupid.
Yes. That's pretty great. And actually, I mean, yeah. I did want to mention Pinball's death felt very, like, sudden to me. Like, it seemed like, was that clear to you that he had died before they showed his body?
If I hadn't seen this movie, probably not.
Okay.
Because it feels like he gets a lot of character development. He gets a lot of stuff to do. Like,
yeah, and then they kill him off.
And then like, he kind of dies off screen in a weird way.
Yeah. It's kind of like brushed off. Like, oh, Pinball's dead now. And it's like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
That's a shame. I also love, there's a line, somebody's talking to Cyrus. I forget who. But somebody says to Cy, it's like, "Cy." And Cyrus goes, "Anara." And... And shoots him.
I think that's when he kills the convict who was trying to get away without everybody by himself.
Right, right, right.
And I think that's when he blows him up, right? Yeah. He slurs a cigarette.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
It's insane. It's dumb.
Like, it's that kind of movie, you know? So it's totally silly. It's totally nuts. But yeah, I very much enjoyed watching Con Air. It's super dumb. It's just super dumb. But it's a good time. Like, it's a really enjoyable time, especially if you love action movies. Like, it's, and we do. Yeah. So, it works out for us. I don't think it's as good as The Rock. And I haven't watched Face Off in a very long time either, but I don't think it's as good as Face Off. But
we'll find out.
But it is one of the core Nick Cage action trilogy movies. And so we have to give it respect for that, for giving us Con Air. And it is it's a cult classic today. People love Con Air. Like, it's kind of like, not a respected movie, but it's a movie that people really dig. Like, people still talk about it. I would say 40% of Nicolas Cage gifts are Con Air gifts.
I'll be honest though, watching this movie and that scene when he steps off the bus and his hair blows in the wind. Yeah. I was just like, it's the best gift of all time.
It is. It's all purpose. Good for any occasion. I'm also a big fan of Nick Cage giving his little wink. To this camera as well. It's pretty nice. There's just so much silly good stuff in this movie. It's a fun time to watch. If you haven't watched it, give it a shot, especially if you've watched The Rock and like The Rock.
Yeah.
It's very much in the same mold. And it doesn't have the I don't think it has the character development of The Rock, which I think is part of what brings it down a little bit. Because The Rock is mostly just centered on Cage, Connery, and Harris. And all those characters are pretty well developed throughout that movie. This one is like bare bones basics, like these are the characters, deal with it, and that provides its own kind of fun as well. So Con Air, you're a fan, Mike?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right, is there anything else you want to talk about before we move on to Netflix reviews?
No, I think it's Netflix review time. I gotta see what these people have to say.
All right, I hope
our old friend is there too.
You're gonna be waiting. I couldn't find. I mean, I did put these ones together pretty quickly, so
okay. Fair enough.
But in any case, here's the Netflix reviews for Con Air. Most of them are bad reviews. I will throw that out there. All right, here's a 1-star review of Con Air. This is literally one of the worst movies ever. Nicolas Cage is one of the worst actors in history, leaving Las Vegas excluded. There is not a single believable or realistic aspect to the plot. The thing that really bothers me about this is that they somehow got John Malkovich involved. First of all, I do like that he, you know, Nicolas Cage, one of the worst actors in history, except for leaving Las Vegas. Gotta give him props.
Yeah.
Gotta give him props for leaving Las Vegas. Which is interesting, because leaving Las Vegas kind of builds on all of his other performances. Like, it's still a goofy Nick Cage performance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. It's pretty sad that person was disappointed by John Malkovich because he's what makes this movie.
Exactly. Like, he's really fantastic. All right, here's another one-star review of Con Air. This is the worst major budget movie ever made. I mean that. Money, and he instead of money, he put $3 signs. $3 signs is the only reason anyone made this movie. There's no regard to movies or art or anything. Here, we made this, you buy it, so I can leave work and go buy something else. Maybe some Wendy's or something. Yeah, that's what it is. These people were hungry, saw a Wendy's commercial and said, well, let's get this movie made so I can go get a double whatever. I got a date tonight anyways, and I don't want to be messing around with this quote-unquote movie all day. The second worst movie is Face Off.
Wow.
Flip the Nicolas Cage book, and you have some very good movies. Raising Arizona, Weatherman, Bringing Out the Dead, Matchstick Men. If you like any of the latter movies, then you won't like this one, and I don't want to hear any of this. I don't want to hear any of this. It's so good, it's bad junk either. In the ever descriptive and intelligent words of ex football star John Madden, it's just a bad movie.
What?
That was one of the most ridiculous rants I've ever heard. Wow. And I just watched Con Air.
Yeah. I mean, I applaud the effort at an attempt at a takedown of capitalism, but
but like,
it got a little muddy there.
wasn't quite able to track your point. Also, he says, also he doesn't want to hear any of this so good it's bad junk. He has that the other way around.
Yep.
And yeah, he's quoting John Madden of all people.
Like, bizarre.
I think that's the perfect capper to this. A slam on Face Off out of nowhere. All right, here's a two-star review of Con Air. Nick Cage got a free ticket to ride in Hollywood as an heir to the Coppola movie throne, but his career nosedived after a series of critical failures like Con Air. Even a generic Southern accent is beyond the affectation of this one-dimensional actor for idiots only.
Damn.
Yeah, harsh.
Guess I'm an idiot then.
Guess so. Also incorrect, because this was not when his career nosedived.
No.
And I mean, in one perspective, Nicolas Cage has been steadily working for many years, just not in the movies that people like.
Yeah. So suck on that.
So there's that. And then there's a zero-star review of,
that's possible?
Of Con Air. I think they posted it and the rating wasn't counted or something. They forgot to rate it. I don't know. I didn't know that was a thing. But there's no rating on Netflix, just zero stars. Please read the common sense rating. You may want to change your mind about watching this one. It sounds terrible. No wonder there is so much violence in the world when people watch so much of this kind of stuff.
That's it? That's the whole review?
That's the entire review.
All right, I'm going to count it. I'm going to say that that's our old friend. That's close. It's close enough.
Well, you're going to say that's our old friend? Oh, which old friend were you talking about?
The person who always complains about the cursing.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about our old friend who says Nick Cage doing what he does best, and that's making great movies.
Oh my God. All right, I'll be fair. I forgot about that person, too.
So, yeah, that could be our old friend. We've got so many old friends.
Who knew we'd make characters on this podcast? Like, who knew?
Yeah. All right, here's a five-star review of Con Air. Awesome movie. My most favorite movie is the older prison guard who hated inmates despite what happens to him during the movie. And, of course, the wisecracking Cyrus the Virus makes the whole movie himself. Oh, stewardess, what's the in-flight movie today? Guard. Well, I think you're going to like it, Cyrus. It's called I'll Never Eat Steak Again, followed by the sequel I'll Never Make Love on the Beach Again. LOL.
That person gets it.
That guy gets it. Yeah. Good line, also, by the way.
It is very
witty comeback from that guard.
Yep.
Almost like a writer thought that up.
How dare it? Yeah, it's almost like he had someone write it for him.
And finally, here's the one last one. It's a five-star review of Con Air. To a person like me who lost two kids when this guy met his family, to me, it was the most touching moment and reminded me of all tragedies I went through. This movie is among my favorites. So Con Air can be all things to all people.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
That's the real takeaway. Everyone comes at stuff with their own experiences.
Yeah, it's an emotional experience, Con Air. The movie where John Malkovich holds a bunny at gunpoint.
Yeah. It's a very important bunny.
It is a very important bunny. It has to be for Nick Cage's daughter. She almost refuses the bunny at the end, Mike. It was so heartbreaking.
Oh, I know. They twisted the knife.
Ah, man. But then she takes it. And it's nice. And then the song kicks in. Yep. And we roll, and then we see Steve Buscemi rolling dice in the casino, possibly getting rich and possibly getting laid, and then the movie ends.
Oscar.
Directed by Simon West. Nominated for 2 Oscars.
Oh, man, what a crazy world.
Oh, man, what a world we live in that allows Con Air to exist. But I'm glad it does. It's a fun time.
Me too.
Yeah, so Con Air, both fans, good stuff. Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you for listening so much to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike's Cree Show. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you are emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks, where we're going to be talking part 3 of the Nick Cage mid-90s action trilogy, Face Off. So that'll be exciting. That'll be really cool.
Yeah,
the big John Woo extravaganza has 92% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Holy shit!
Which compare, like, The Rock had about a 60 something. This movie had a 50 something. Face Off is very highly regarded. So I'm pretty stoked about Face Off. That'll be a fun time to watch. And then join us for Film Bookcast next week, where we're going to be discussing the new film from Marvel, Doctor Strange.
I'm so excited.
I'm pretty stoked about that, too. I'm going to the Alamo Draft House to see that, get the nice seats, the nice surround sound. It's going to be a nice experience. I'm pretty stoked about that. Just the visuals alone, I'm super excited about.
Yeah.
I've heard those are incredible. I'm seeing it in 3D as well. And I've heard the 3D is very good.
Mr. Moneybags.
Look who can spend 3 extra dollars.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm pretty stoked about Doctor Strange. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Scott Derrickson, man, I'm pretty stoked with that guy. Because, I mean, he directed Sinister, which is a movie that I really loved. And then he directed Deliver Us from Evil, which is a movie that I aggressively did not. But
so it could go either way.
But I think this is going to be closer to Sinister. Not a horror movie, but like it's going to be... Yeah. I think he took on more of his team from Sinister and did Doctor Strange, and it's looking very cool. I'm hearing interesting things, like that Benedict Cumberbatch kind of poised to take over the Robert Downey Jr. roles in the Marvel movies, kind of be the new face of the Marvel universe, because Downey Jr. is kind of be on his way out soon.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I'm sure we'll talk about it.
About it in depth, I'm sure. But yeah, so that'll be exciting. So thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.